Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. This episode of Coach P's Perspective is brought to you by Manscaped, the world champion in men's grooming, the best in men's grooming. For me, I've always believed as an athlete and as a coach, if you look good, you feel good, you're going to perform good. So I like to turn to Manscaped products. I use their shampoo, body wash, deodorant, lip balm, cologne. You name it, they pretty much have it, right? World-class trimmers. And one of the things I love about Manscaped is this. Whenever we're looking at their grooming products, they are paraben-free, cruelty-free, dye-free. If I'm going to put it on my body, I want to make sure it's healthy and I want to make sure I smell good, right? So if you or someone you know wants to stay fresh, smell fresh, you want to walk out there with confidence, make sure that you go to manscaped.com, check out their products. And you can get a 20% discount right now using the code COACHP20. That is COACHP20. The world champions, the best in men's grooming, Manscaped. All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped. I have a guest on who actually, this is his second time being on. I've only had a few people on more than once, which means I think they're pretty awesome. So this is Coach Jim Grunewald. And if you go back to, I want to say maybe episode 84, 82, somewhere in there, you can hear Coach Grunewald's entire backstory. You can hear a lot about his life, his coaching philosophies, those type of things. I wanted to have him on again because he actually just put out a new book, which we're going to discuss here in a little bit. But Coach Grunewald is he is currently the head wrestling coach at Wheaton College, couple-time Olympian in Greco-Roman wrestling. He's a husband, he's a dad. And then, like I said, he is now an author of a new book, which I just got in the mail a couple of days ago. And I asked Coach, hey, can you sign it for me? So I got a signed copy in the mail and I've been digging into it the last 2 days. So Coach, thanks for being on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You bet. So, well, let's kind of start here so that people who are maybe new listeners that haven't heard the previous episode can know just a little bit about, you know, where you grew up at. And of course, wrestling is your main sport, kind of how you got into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So for those, I mean, I don't assume that anybody knows me. I always jokingly say when I go to tournaments, someone say, hey, I remember your wrestling career. I'm like, great. You and like three other people remember that I wrestled 20 years ago. But with that being said, so I grew up in and around the Milwaukee area in Wisconsin, and how I got into wrestling is a little bit unique. I got into a fight and I lost it, right? I thought I had won it because at first it started on the feet where you pop, pop, pop someone in the face and you think, okay, I've won. And then all of a sudden they double leg take you down. You know, our kids are, you know, they're fighting 1 second and they're friends and they're fighting the next second. And so beyond that, like a couple of weeks after this fight, the same friend of mine said, hey, do you want to learn how to wrestle? I was like, absolutely. I want to learn how to wrestle, thinking back to the fight that I'd lost. And that's how it kickstarted. I kind of dabbled with it. My, you know, sixth and seventh grade years, I got a little bit more serious about it in eighth grade. And then by the time I hit my freshman year in high school, I was all in wrestling. And so I was traveling, you know, like a lot of kids do today, to the Northern Plains Regional Nationals or what's now called Fargo, the Cadet Nationals, the Junior Nationals, anything that I could get my hands on. So that's a little bit of my wrestling background, at least as far as I got started. And then, of course, I wrestled in college at Maranatha, which is a real small private school, 450 students, dinky. But I was coached by probably one of the most iconic Christian figures in wrestling, which is Ben Peterson. And then both he and his brother, John Peterson, mentored me from 18 to now I'm 52. And I hope I'll get another couple of decades out of them. And then from there, I springboarded to, as you mentioned, to the world and Olympic level.
That's it's pretty cool thinking about that, going to a small school And, you know, I mean, you were a very successful high school wrestler, not only in folk style, but in freestyle and Greco at the time. But think that you went to a small school, and sometimes people like have these like, oh, I got to go to D1, got to go D1. But man, I mean, getting mentored by the Petersons, like God couldn't have put you on a better path, right? To go in and have coaches like that, who then you can build a relationship with, who can then mentor you throughout your life. It's just funny because, you know, hindsight's 2020, you can look back and see that now, but you don't know that going in, you know, what a blessing that's going to be, even though there are things that draw you to those schools or to those coaches, you know, that's a pretty cool blessing in and of itself right there.
Absolutely. And it's the thing is, I again, somewhat jokingly tell people there are two things that have kept me out of prison, Jesus and wrestling. And a big part of that wrestling was having that mentorship by Ben and John Peterson. I mean, I would not be the man that I am today. In fact, that's even how the book got started. You know, Ben wrote a book called Road to Gold. And I looked at him and said, yeah, but Ben, not all roads lead to gold. And I'm like, there you go. That's the title of my book. We can sell it right next to each other. And the funny thing is Ben just ordered 10 copies of mine so that he could sell it alongside of his when he starts, you know, when he starts doing his summer book tour that he normally goes on in speaking engagements. So yeah, I mean, just the fact, I mean, looking back now, having Ben Peterson, John Peterson in my life was so transformational because I didn't grow up with a dad, and I love and honor my father. He was one of the best sports dads ever, right? For 30 years of me competing, or close to 30 years, he just said, son, I love you and I'm proud of you. Wrestling, win or lose, didn't make a difference. Ben and John Peterson, they took care of the, what is it to be a Christian husband, father, neighbor? You know, how do you treat people? Even outside of your, you know, your belief system, you need to just treat them with love and respect. And so that was huge for me. And I can't stress enough the blessing that it was getting mentored by such quality people and then being able to pay that forward now as a coach.
Yeah, which I think is another major thing, you know, you writing this book, that not only is legacy for you and your family, right? So then your children can get to see it and get to know dad in a little deeper and better way. But anytime we have these coaches or people, it doesn't have to be coaches, that have poured into our lives and mentored us, whenever we get to pass those lessons on to somebody else, it's like that goes from generation to generation. So, you know, the Peterson brothers' legacy runs through you and then all those that you teach and coach and mentor along the way, and that gets passed down. So it's sort of the butterfly effect that happens. So, all right, coach, let's go ahead and kind of jump into the book. So I want to start here. Why did you write the book initially?
Interestingly enough, I had actually started a book 20 years ago now, almost in 2004, about sports and parenting. I was at an event and this parent lost their mind. And I'm like, wow. And I remember not being able to fall asleep one night. And then I just started, you know, writing stuff down, taking notes. And then spent about a year and a half writing a book and then shelved it. I've shelved it for the last 18 years. It's a book on sports parenting because I had no confidence in it whatsoever. So now you fast forward to 2020 and I get a call from Craig Sesker. And he's like, hey, we got to write your story. I'm like, yeah, because people want to hear about a guy who trained for 16 years and never medaled at the World Olympic level. That's going to be a great story to tell. He's like, Jim, actually it is, because so few people can relate to the amazing careers of somebody like Jordan Burroughs or Jaden Cox or Kyle Snyder, right? Because they're so beyond the scope of most people's imagination. I mean, let's be real. When I go to camps and clinics and people hear, oh, you're on two Olympic teams, the parents are wowed by that. But the kids, they don't get wowed until you say, oh, yeah, I was a high school champ. Like, you were a high school state champ. That's amazing, right? Because the Olympics is too big for them. And then to be Olympic champion, there's very few kids that can relate to that. And very few adults. I mean, it's an impossible dream for most people. And so when Craig, you know, reached out to me, initially I was very hesitant. I'm like, no, there's no way. And then the more he talked and kind of needled me and prodded me, and eventually I'm sitting down with Tom Ryan and we start at a camp, at an FCA camp. He asked me, he's like, Jim, tell me a little about your story. And so I gave him the short version of my story. He's like, oh my goodness. I had no idea. I'm like, yeah, Sesker's want me to write a book with him. He's like, you got to do it. People need to hear this. And he listed off a couple of his athletes, like they need to hear this right now, that not everything, as you said, leads to, you know, not all roads lead to gold. And so between Tom, I said, fine, Tom, if you want me to write this book, then you just wrote a book. You can write my foreword. If you write the foreword, I'll write the book. And he's like, done. So he wrote the foreword. He banged that thing out and then sent it to me. I sent it to Sesker. And then I said, all right, looks like I got to write the book. And so we just spent about 8 months where he interviewed me, and that's how the book came to be. And then he broke it down into chapter form, and then I edited it, and then he edited it, and then it came back to me. I re-edited it, and you know how the process goes, right? Then it goes to a professional editor, and then you get it back and you want to add a little bit more. And then finally they're like, listen, we got to get this thing out. Summer camps are right around the corner. Spring's right around the corner. This is the time to do it. So as much as I would have liked a last edit, didn't get it. But again, I think the product is, the story is complete. And we can always make things better, but sometimes there's just a need to not sacrifice the greater good, I think, in just getting that story out with wanting to try to get that perfection.
Yeah, which is a lesson in and of itself, right? Sometimes you got to just, go do the thing and you know, not always try to like reach perfection. So, okay, before we delve into the book, because this is something I think that maybe, I don't know if everybody, but a lot of people have at some point had a thought run across their mind, like, I think I'd like to write a book one day. Maybe that's, you know, principles of success. Maybe it's a personal story. Maybe they have a creative mind and they want to write a fiction book, whatever. Writing a book is difficult. It is not easy. So tell me a little bit about the discipline that it took, or some of maybe the creativity or thought process that it took, and maybe how that connects to wrestling or sports or even coaching.
Yeah, good. So, I mean, part of it is too, especially if you're telling your story, you have to relive moments of pain, right? So there's a certain amount of courage to go back and rethink. You know, for me, it was, you know, my parents' divorce. It was a lot of the losses that ended up being very transformational for me. Now, not every transformational moment I had was painful, but again, you have to relive that. So that part was hard. And then there's the discipline of, you know, I'm working on a master's right now. I'm a head coach. I do camps and clinics. I've got a wife, 7 kids, and I just took in my 16-year-old nephew. And so there is a lot on my plate. And then to add, okay, now you're going to write a book. You got to be creative, disciplined with your time to be able to, okay, I've had 8 months of conversations with someone. He transcribes it. Now you've got to put it in a writing voice, right? Because a speaking voice doesn't come across the way a writing voice does. And so to capture the interest of people, you've got to make sure that you're writing it in such a way that sucks them into the story. And that did take, again, reliving those moments, being disciplined to find the time to do it, and then just getting it done and making sure that you're doing the right thing the right way at the right time. It was challenging. And again, as you well know, because you've written a book, right? So you get the process, you know, the discipline that it takes to get it done. And you understand that it's not easy. Most people, when they do write their first book, it is somewhat of an autobiography. There's very few people that jump in and say, okay, I'm going to be a fictional writer. Mm-hmm. You know, it starts off with something like this. And I didn't want to just be this to be a glorification of Grunewald, as you mentioned earlier. I wanted people to be able to look at this book and see it almost as somewhat of a metaphor for their own lives and be able to say, okay, there's going to be failures in life. How do I move forward? Here's his story. Here's how he got through it. Here's some of the principles that helped him. I'm going to take those same principles to help me through these dark moments.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. You know, I mean, I'm a few chapters in, you know, I'm already able to connect with several things in your story, right? So we live two different lives, two different places, but I'm able to connect with several things in your story and then see how those things played out in my life and maybe a different road I could have taken, you know, or where maybe I took the right road, you know. But that's what I love about hearing somebody's story. And we had kind of mentioned this off camera earlier, we were talking. And, you know, whenever you write a book like this, it's not for you. And like you said, it's not a glorification of Coach Grunewald. It is sharing your story so that if anybody anywhere can be inspired. And you said that, hey, if I can inspire one person, it was absolutely worth all the work. And it is. And it's going to inspire lots and lots and lots of people. And that's why Coach Ryan was like, hey, you need to do this. As, you know, it's why Craig was like, hey, you need to do this. Yeah. You know, so it's going to help a lot of people. But all right, so let's look at and you mentioned earlier, the road to gold, but I really love to, because I know like in my own book, the title of the book meant something to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it kind of brings everything together. So whenever you wrote this title, right? And I'm looking at the book, I got it sitting right here. You know, not all roads lead to gold. And this is, like you said, it's a lesson that we all can, I think, relate with, because it's hard to say, like, hey, a Jordan Burroughs, who's just like somehow getting better and better with age and has won everything under the sun, you know? So a lot of times we look at, in sports in general, I'm not just talking wrestling, sports in general, we look at outcomes. We base everything on outcomes. And if I didn't get my desired outcome, if I didn't achieve my goal, then I must have failed. I must be a failure. Mm. And then maybe at some point, hopefully, people were either able to realize on our own, or someone's able to point out that, hey, man, the vast majority of this whole thing was a process, right? The outcome at the end was just a little bitty piece of this. So when I look at this, not all roads lead to gold. I'm thinking, okay, maybe you didn't achieve your goals, but maybe there was a lot of other great things in the process. So tell me what, because that's what I think when I see this. Tell me what your thought process was.
No, you've hit it right on the head. So even when I was talking to Ben Peterson and jokingly came up with the title for the book, because his title was Road to Gold, right? And I was like, yeah, but Ben, not all roads lead to gold. Even in his, I mean, Ben was an Olympic champion, but he was also an Olympic silver medalist. And then he didn't get to go to the Olympics in 1980, right? And his brother flipped. His brother was an Olympic silver medalist, and then was an Olympic gold medalist. But he had other world championships where he wasn't a gold or a silver. And so the title, words are important, right? And it's key to life to make sure that we have clear definitions. So I very definitely didn't want to write no roads lead to gold. And I didn't want every road leads to gold. It's just not all road leads to gold. And so that is so important that people understand that when you write something, the title of the book has got to capture the eyes. And it's not just the title, it's the picture that goes along with it. And I know we can't judge a book by its cover, but covers are important, right? They draw the eyes. The title captures the mind. And so when I say not all roads lead to gold, that is not me saying that you're never going to win. And I'm not saying that you're never going to lose. I'm just saying, there's a struggle along the way, that it really is about the journey. So let's not be disingenuous. Let's actually appreciate the journey and take the wins and losses, which can both be transformational in our lives, and make sure that we see that winning and losing do not define me. They direct me. What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? And so that's the importance. And even the picture on it, right? You've got one of me standing with my arm being raised. The very next match, that's the very next match, I'm on my knees and my humeral head is in my armpit, and I'm surrounded by 3-4 doctors and my coach looking down on me.
Yeah.
Right? That title and that picture screams life, right? It encapsulates it all in just one moment of a title and a picture, which is exactly what I want to do. So it doesn't make a difference if you're a wrestler or you're from sports, or you're in the business world. Think of the number of times people fail in business before something's successful, right? It's more common to fail in business than it is to be successful in business. And yet you learn something along the way. I just wanted to point people to the process of learn along the way.
So I'm glad that you said that, because it kind of leads me right into my next question. Who is this book written for, right? Because when I look at it, it's got wrestler on the front, you know, looking all muscled up on there with your beard. And like you said, and then, you know, picture where you're, you know, struggling because you just got injured. I know it's not just for wrestlers, right? So kind of tell me, when you wrote it mentally, who were was there a specific group that you were writing this for?
No, I wanted it to be an everyone thing, right? I wanted someone, I wanted this to be, again, not just wrestling, not just sports. It could be someone who's struggling on the violin. Yeah. It could be somebody who's, you know, haven't had that breakout moment as an artist yet. You know, think of a 1980s band that was a one-hit wonder, you know, just struggling just to be seen, to be heard. And we hear about all the success stories, you know, but what about all the others that didn't make it? And so I wanted anyone who was looking for hope, right? And that's really what this is. It's about failing forward. This isn't about getting comfortable with failure. I've never wanted people, and some people look at that and that's, well, you just want people to get comfortable failing. No, I don't. I want to get people comfortable with pushing through failure. And that's one of the key principles throughout the book, along with what I mentioned earlier about, we're not defined by our wins and our losses. We're directed by them. What small and big things can I change? And I don't know what's going to be for another person. Again, a lot of this is me having a catastrophic injury in the semifinals of the World Championships and being a hair's breadth away from being a World Olympic medalist, the thing that I trained for 16 years at the World Olympic level, being snatched away, and then wondering, is this a career-ending injury? This is somebody losing their job. This is someone with any other catastrophic, it's just a dot, dot, dot. What small loss or what catastrophic loss in your life are you going to now use not to defeat you, but to push through the failure of the moment, to come back a better version of yourself?
Excellent. Getting me fired up, man. seriously, getting fired up over here. So, all right. I'm going to make this a two-part question. What was probably the most difficult portion of this book to write? And what was probably your favorite portion of this book to write?
Good. So probably the most difficult part was the opening two paragraphs.
Yeah.
Reliving sitting there as a child and having my dad come up to me and say, you've got to be the man of the house now. And as a six-year-old trying to process that, watching him walk away, and then dealing with the emotions of not having a dad in the home anymore, something that you've experienced now, you know, at least cognitively, at least 2 years, right? If a kid loses, we know scientifically speaking that if a kid loses their parent four and under, they're probably not going to remember their parent at all. But I had from four until six and had my dad. So it's not like somebody I was going to forget. And he was in my life enough for me to be always wondering, well, what's going on here? I mean, we would get weekend a month and 2 weeks over the summer, reliving that. If I'm being 100% honest, it was an emotional time. It brought some tears to my eyes. The best part of the book was looking back now as a 52-year-old man and seeing how some of those negative moments in my life, those painful moments, just made me who I am today. Reliving, you know, getting donkey stomped by Tom Brands in the Midlands, and realizing that if that didn't happen then and there, I wouldn't have been prepared to wrestle Dennis Hall, because Dennis Hall is just a Greco version of Tom and Terry Brands. Or if you want to flip it, Tom and Terry Brands are just freestyle versions of Dennis Hall. That was a transformational, painful moment. So I can look back now as 52-year-old Jim Grunewald, like, wow, that was awesome. That was awesome. Like, I needed that butt whooping. You know, it was looking at 11 years of losing to Dennis Hall in a row and being 7-16 against him, but then knowing how the last six matches went, right? Reliving all that and re-experiencing, but now experiencing it from a more mature, rather than going through the pain of the moment, I see how the pain led to something positive today.
Yeah, that's, and it's crazy to think about. And I remember you telling me that story about taking that butt whooping at the Midlands, you know, It's crazy to think about something like that, but how it was a transformational moment, right? It was a great transition that you needed as a wrestler, as a human being, that prepped you for the future. You know, again, hindsight's 2020, we can look back and see those things, but sometimes it's like, you wish you could go back and talk to your little bit younger self and be like, hey dude, You needed that right there. You know? So that would be nice, but I guess that's not really life right there. So as long as we can learn from it at some point.
Yeah, that's important too, right? Because I've John Peterson, I said, John, whenever I develop a time machine, I'll go back. Is there anything you want me to tell you, younger you? And John's like, yeah, teach me, Jim, you're a Greco guy. Teach me how to do a body lock before, you know, the 72 Olympics, because I'll do a lot better in that last match. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. You know, but I'm going to tell my younger me as well. But yeah, I mean, we wish we could go back. But the thing is, when you're in the moment, right, and it's painful, you can't see beyond it.
Yeah.
You can't see beyond that moment. But once you work through it and you look back, you see, okay, now I see the value. I mean, at first I didn't see the value of dislocating my shoulder. What value is that? God, what value is that? How is this helpful right now? It's not helpful. I can't even wrestle for third place. This sucks. This is a part of life that sucks. Well, I get years down the road and I realized what a jerk I was in a lot of injury situations that didn't involve me. I had no compassion for people who got hurt until I got hurt. The Jim Grunewald, after he got injured, that nearly catastrophic injury that almost kept me from wrestling, and the second time that it happened, it did. My career was over. That Grunewald learned compassion. So the Grunewald of today is a compassionate coach. He's a compassionate athlete. He's a compassionate husband and father and neighbor. He wasn't 20 years ago. So painful at the moment, didn't see it, couldn't navigate it, didn't understand it. 20 years later, it's crystal clear.
It's amazing how something like that, now you can relate whenever one of your athletes gets injured. Somebody you're working with, you can now relate. And that made me also think about being a parent. You know, I know that once I became a parent, I became a much better coach. I became, I guess compassionate would be the right word to use, right? I was a much stricter and tougher coach in a different way, right? And now I think I've grown in compassion and become a much better coach after having kids.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of injuries too. So I'm right there with that. I fully understand the injury bugs. So, all right. You know, looking at those things, I don't want you to be modest on this. And I think this all goes along with you writing this book. God's given us all gifts and abilities and even tells us to use those, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we look at the story of, you know, the parable of the talents, the type of thing, it's our responsibility to not just hide those things, right? And you're utilizing as a dad, as a husband, as an author, as a coach. But if you were to narrow down and say like, hey, this is sort of my genius, this is sort of the genius that God has given me to use, what would you say your genius is?
Boy, that's the first time someone's asked me that question. I think I have an ability. I guess it's to be able to see a problem and then try to find both the, because there's a tension between creativity and guide rails, right? You can't just be creative and have no direction, right? And you can't just have these rigid rules and no creativity. The best product comes between that tension, that ability to work with creativity and guides. I think that's probably it, right? Being able to navigate those waters, whether it was in my own career, right? Thinking outside of the box, being told by Anatoly, hey, you've got to do a swing lift. And me saying, Anatoly, I'm too short for a swing lift. People are bumping me and I'm falling on my face and learning to do a side lift, right? So I was creative and thinking outside of what was traditionally being done in Greco at the time, but also within the rules, you know, of Greco wrestling and the rules of strength conditioning and everything else, I was able to find a lift that worked for me. Now I do the same thing for my athletes, right? Find that I'm not looking for a cookie cutter program. I want to develop the athlete to make them the best version of them. Now there's some fundamental principles of wrestling that you cannot break. I think hand fighting is a necessary skill. So everybody in my room hand fights. They just don't all hand fight like Jim Grunewald. I give them the outline. I let them color the picture. If God's given me something, it's to walk the tension between the two, to get that creative genius within the lines and boundaries, because boundaries are important. Without boundaries, we are off the rails. And if you can do that as a coach, a teacher, as a father, right, as any sort of a mentorship, if you can do it. So I think that God's given me that ability. And I like the fact that you used the word modesty, because to be immodest is to self-glorify, right? When you're talking about modesty, a lot of people think about dressing or they're thinking about, no, it's really about why you do what you do. My motivation is not self-promotion. So I can be modest and say, God has given me this gift and this is how I use it, versus me holding up a big giant sign saying, look at how great I am. Look at the genius that is Jim Grunewald. I acknowledge that I am not essential to God's plan, but I can be important. That's the idea of modesty right there.
Yeah, that's it's a great gift to have that you just talked about. So important. And it's something I relate to that very, very well. So it's something I feel like as a wrestler and as a coach, I have a lot of creativity. I've had to figure out ways to do that. Strength conditioning, same thing. So that's something I fully relate to and that I admire and I respect. An area I'm always trying to develop. So talking about God, I know faith is central in your life. Where does faith play a part in this book? And where does it play a part in Not All Roads Lead to Gold?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. So faith, yes, faith is that thing about me that you can't pull out of me. And so what's key though, is when you're writing a book or when you're speaking in front of a group of people, you don't want to get too preachy because people are going to turn you off. Mm-hmm. And so you have to deliver the message. And that was the beauty of Christ, right? If you look at Christ and the message, he was a storyteller. So all I did was tell a story. And I just took tips from the master storyteller. And I just told the principle of his story, but I just used my story with it. So the theme of my faith comes through quite a bit. And honestly, that's the same theme that we find in the Bible. Not all roads lead to gold. And if you think about it, there is no faith in easy. So if we were given a life that was so easy, I mean, Christ said, you know, healthy people don't need a doctor. So they're not going to listen to the message. It's the sick people that are looking for a doctor. It's the people who are hurting that need that message of not all roads lead to gold. Well, that's the Christian message out there, that there's something bigger than them that's going to give them hope. I mean, because we live in a world right now, if you look at suicide rates, with it's even creeping in the middle school now, but in high school and young college people who are healthy, by all appearances, especially now that, with a pandemic, all the more necessary is for something with a message of hope to come through. And that's what Not All Roads is about. It's about hope. There's something bigger than you out there. Let me walk alongside of you, not pushing you, not pulling you. That's not what a good coach does. Maybe at times, little bits, incrementally, but ultimately the best coaches walk alongside their athletes and give them direction.
Yeah, that is, man, it's got my brain turning right here. So that's a great way to put it, to think about it. And man, hope is something that is so, it's something we just have to have right now, right? It's not like it hasn't always been important. It has, but there's just like a light shining right now, like you said, with suicides and depression and all these things that adults of every level face, but like our young people, right? We're coaches, we're teachers, we're concerned about our young people. And man, if we can get in there and build some hope and shine a light into their hearts and into their minds and the people that are impacting them, right? So their coaches, their teachers, their parents, because sort of like FCA, you know, as you positively impact the coach, that positively impacts his team. If we can do that with all people in leadership and we can shine, you know, shine a light and give them some hope, right? And let them know like, hey, you're going to go through struggles. Everything is not easy. You're going to go through them, but man, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. You can push through it. You can fall forward. Now those people can then pour that into the young people that they're working with. So again, it kind of brings this whole thing around that this book is for everybody, man. This is something that we need as a society right now, which makes me even more grateful that you wrote it and that you took the time to put that out there and that you kind of listened to the call of God through a few people who prodded you and said, Coach, you got to get your story out there.
Yeah. And that's the other thing is what is the alternative, right? I remember my dad, he drank to numb the pain, right? Because that's what the world offers. The world just offers a distraction. It's numbing the pain. It's creating a momentary euphoria, whether it be through drugs or sex. You know, it's a distraction of video games or a movie or binging a Netflix or whatever it happens to be. But when you get beyond that momentary fix, whatever it is, there's always that letdown. There's that crash. And so then they become despondent. So there's no hope that's offered by the world. The pain of the world just leads to death. The pain of working through these moments and either being a light to other people, right? Oswald Chambers said it very eloquently, and I don't remember which one it was in his book, My Utmost for His Highest, but he talked about a lot of what we live through is God giving us moments, not for us, but to help other people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that goes through my mind, you know, as I give that rant to my team. That same thing is what came through in the book. I didn't relive those painful moments in my life for me. I relived them for other people so that they could have hope. Because listen, you have to be a light in the dark place. You have to be. That's what hope is. We can't live in the dark place, but we have to teach people how to navigate those waters because life is good. There's good parts of life, but man, there's some spots where it's going to get real dark. And if you are alone or you don't see an end to it, if there's a hopelessness there, you're going to end things. Mm-hmm. And I don't want that. My roommate at the Olympic Training Center ended things. And to this day, it still grieves me. I mean, I'm grieving right now thinking about it because I loved him. We were friends. We were training partners. And so part of this is also reliving those stories so that people can say, see, hey, there's light out there. And not to be too preachy, but that light really is Christ and what he has to offer. He offers so much hope. And I'm not a perfect Christian. And I know a lot of Christians aren't. That's why we don't look to Christians.
Yeah.
We look to Christ. Too many people get disenfranchised because they focus on a Christian that it did it poorly. Well, yeah, we're people. We're flawed. We're going to make mistakes, even if we do things really well. So I also wanted that light, that story, that theme, that hope. And again, not in a preachy way, but to point back to Christ.
Yeah, and it absolutely will. I mean, I have no doubt that these stories that you share, even if it's not coming out and saying like you said, not in a preachy way or like, hey, I didn't rewrite the Bible for you, right? I'm telling stories about my life, but we're shining a light where it needs to be. So who are some of the people, it's like if you win a championship, you didn't do it alone. If you get to go and compete in a big tournament, right? It took a lot of preparation to get there. You didn't do it alone. Whether you got the gold or whatever, right? You prepared the best you could. So writing a book is a team effort and you can't do it alone. So you and Craig wrote this, but who are some of the other people that were instrumental that you want to shout out and thank, and some of the people who really helped bring this thing together?
Yeah, no, that's a typical Wisconsin expression, right? The whole yeah, no thing. Sorry, I'm regionalizing myself. You know what, my wife, and just because, you know, while I'm working on this, she's handling everything else. So she's amazing. And I make sure that I say that in the book. You know, while I'm here banging away at the, you know, computer, just sitting there sometimes, you know how it is, you're just staring and like, how can I rewrite this so that it comes across, makes the point, but I can be as succinct as possible without boring the reader? How can I do this? How can I add a little personality to it? So while I'm doing that, she's managing the family, right? So she, I think, first and foremost, you know, outside of obviously God and Christ. I mean, I think that goes without saying, you know, because he gives us the creativity and puts the boundaries. But my wife was hugely instrumental for this to be able to be done, because without her, there's no book, right? I need the time to be able to craft that. And then, of course, it's the people that built into me. You know, it's like a wrestling match, right? I try to tell people all the time, we blame the wrong people at the wrong time. When we lose, a lot of times we start pointing the finger at who to blame. I'm like, no, you don't blame people for your losses. You blame others for your wins. So I would blame Ben and John Peterson. I would blame Steve Frazier and Anatoly Petrosian and Momir Petkovic, Ivan Ivanov. I would blame my mom and my dad for my wins. Why? Because without them, I don't exist. I would blame my wife. I would blame my training partners. You blame everybody else for your wins and you take responsibility for your losses. So if you want to know who the shout outs are for, good grief. You know, again, my wife, Ben and John Peterson, Tom Ryan, Craig Sesker, the list goes on. It's every coach that's ever built into me. It's all of my training partners. It's Dennis Hall, right? Somebody who I battled with for 15 years. I blame him. If it weren't for Dennis Hall, I wouldn't have had to push as hard as I did just to get out of the country. So by the time I got out of the country, I had the confidence of being a high-level wrestler. You want to talk about a story. That in and of itself is the theme behind Not All Roads Lead to Gold. And Dennis, I think, would wholeheartedly agree. Yeah, he's a world champ, also an Olympic silver medalist, right? So, yeah, even some of my fiercest opponents, I give them a shout out, because I think they're fundamentally important to the story.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and that kind of brings around the no man's an island. And a lot of times we see people that are successful in various areas and whatever your definition of success, but we see people that are doing some good things in various areas. And we just feel like, hey, man, that guy's just got it. He can go do that thing. So if I want to be really good, I got to, and you don't really see the deeper backstory, like we're seeing in this book, but you don't also see all those other people that have poured in. And so sometimes I guess I would speak to us men. I think women are probably naturally better at this, but men, sometimes we want to be an island. We want to try to get everything done by ourselves, not ask for help, not reach out and get a group of people to pour into us and help us in the situation. But as an athlete, you can oftentimes just briefly, right? You can think about it. Dang, who are all these coaches that help me? Who are my training partners that help me? Well, guess what, man? That's a bigger picture for life too. Like, we all need that in every area. So putting a book together is a legacy of all those people that poured into your life. If you want to be good at anything, you got to find a lot of people that are going to help you. Promoting a book, right? That's not easy. I didn't think about that when I was writing a book. Like, how am I going to promote it? Like, I'll just throw it on Facebook and it'll sell a bunch of copies.
Yeah.
You need people that know what they're doing in those areas and to help you. And what's great about it is there are lots of people out there willing to do that, right? But in life, we just need people. And thankfully, God built us that way. And if you travel the road alone for long enough, you realize like I'm setting my own glass ceiling. I'm setting my own limit. I got to let other people help me out. So,
absolutely. I mean, look at the very beginning of the story of humanity. What did God create? Because he said, it's not good for man to be alone. So the first thing God did was create community, yeah. Right? Now it ended up being a man and a woman. Great. Right. But then it gets bigger. I'm not using that story to say that you have to get married. That's not what I'm saying. The point of that is that we need community. We need others around us. Because that others, and that story is consistent throughout scripture of that idea of not only mentoring, but also getting mentor and then passing that on generation to generation. You see it in the parenting skills that are offered in the Bible. You see it in the mentoring skills that are offered in the Bible, the relationship between like Barnabas and Paul and Timothy. And you see that leadership pipeline as one builds into the other. I mean, even from a secular standpoint, we get it with Aristotle, Plato, and Socrates, right? We understand that there was a passing of the guard. It was a teacher-student relationship. And then eventually as you grow, you become the teacher and somebody else becomes a student and you pass that on. So it is fundamentally important to have those people in your life, that community, because you're right. When I was writing this book, I didn't think beyond writing it. Mm-hmm. And my wife has said this before. She's like, Jim, you are a great speaker. You are a great writer. You suck at advertising. And she is 100% right. And so I write this book and I'm talking to Tom Ryan. I'm like, man, how am I going to sell this thing? And so he tells me, well, my son built a website for me on Shopify. I'm like, oh, all right. So then what did I do? I had my son build me a website on Shopify and pretty much just got Tom's permission, but pretty much just copied his and put my stuff over the top so that it was my book instead of his. And then I posted on Facebook and Twitter. And again, the average book only sells 500 copies. And most people don't write a book for the book's sake. They write a book to start like some sort of a speaking career. Well, I wrote this book to get it into as many people's hands as possible. This book was not written for me to start a speaking tour, which I do not have the time or the inclination to do. I don't promote myself as a camp or a clinician. I'm word of mouth on everything. Problem is, you can't do that with a book, right? And so then I realized, hey, I've got to get on these podcasts and get this message out there. So I was with Timmy Hands. I was with D3 Nation, with the Bonaventuras. I'm now with you. I'm trying to set up eventually, hopefully, and get with Jason Bryant, all the kind of like big voices in wrestling, and then try to get beyond that, right? I'm hoping that this keeps growing and spreading because I can't do this by myself. And so if there are people even listening to this right now that want to help me promote this thing, that would be great because, again, I'm not Oprah Winfrey or the Obamas where they're going to give me $25 million to write a book up front. And then, you know, a lot of people, those guys that get those big book deals, and they go and buy 5 or 10,000 of them. They get on the New York Times bestseller list because they sold 5 or 10,000 the first week. And then they just gave a bunch of them away or they're sitting back at their home in a garage somewhere. You know, this is me fronting the cash and then waiting to get to that sweet spot where I'm like, okay, the book paid for itself. Now let's see if we can make some money. And I can't complain, right? I'm already at the almost break even point right now. And I haven't started camps and clinics over the summer. But with that being said, in the words of Timmy Hands, he's, you know, from 5 Point Move, not to promote another podcast on your podcast, but we're all about it. He's like, we got to get this in the hands of 50 million people. I'm like, Timmy, if this gets in the hands of 50 million people, I'm going to be in a much better socioeconomic demographic. And there's going to be a lot of, you know, charities and wrestling programs that are going to be benefited from this because that would be a lot of money, more than I would know to deal with. But I appreciated his confidence in the message as well as yours, right? You're having me on here because you believe in what I'm selling, right? You believe in the message that I'm offering. And so I appreciate you taking the time Chad, to give me this opportunity, because you have a group of people who very definitely are going to listen to you. And because you're promoting this, you give me credibility. And I appreciate that. So thank you.
Yeah. And one of the beautiful things about our and it's not just wrestling people listen to this, right? But a lot of wrestling people do. And one of the beautiful things about our wrestling community is like, we're one giant family, man. And like, you know, they say like in life, there's like 6 degrees of separation. There's like two in the wrestling community. You know, like you meet some dude with a cauliflower ear and you guys know a lot of the same people. That's just all there is to it, you know? So all those out here in our wrestling community, the majority of you know Coach Grunewald. You know, if you're my age, you followed his wrestling career. You know, he was just an absolute Greco stud and then an amazing coach. One of my favorite coaches, I'm not just saying that to butter you up. Literally one of my favorite coaches. But those in the wrestling community, you know, buy the book, give copies of the book to your athletes, to your friends, and then put it on your social media pages. And that's how we grow this thing, right? And then people outside of the wrestling world will find it, they'll pick it up, and then it'll start to circulate outside the wrestling world too. But we help our own right away. So you know this, but you have a lot of people that got your back and a lot of people that are going to be getting your book. Because we love what you do in wrestling, for wrestling, who you are in the sport of wrestling. And then those of us in the faith community in wrestling, you know, consider you right there at the top, man. And so, again, FCA and those type of things. But saying all that, where can we get your book?
Yeah, so it's real simple. It's the title of the book.com, notallroadsleadtogold.com. I try to get not all roads, but that's been taken. So I had to do the whole thing, not all roads lead to gold, which I think is great, right? Because then the title's always out there. But yeah, it's that simple. You just go to, you know, www.notallroadsleadtogold.com and it's a click away. And now, and the other thing is too, is, you know, now that I've gotten, you know, pretty much the money, I'm starting to discount the book. It's one of those things where, you know, that first price point, you've got to get to it. I'm like, I just want to make my money back. But, you know, as a math guy, you've got to do that kind of cost benefit analysis. What's the price point? You take people's advice and then you sell it. And you're like, well, I think maybe now just to make this a little bit easier for people to get, maybe I drop it a few bucks now that I don't have to worry about breaking even anymore. And I think the more I sell, you know, the less expensive I can make it. And you're right, it's going to grow, right? If I can get USA Wrestling to back it, FCA Wrestling to back it, the faith community to back it, you know, and then we start getting into the people who are in wrestling, but also are in other communities that believe in the message of the book, they get it out. Then again, as a, you know, former math teacher, you can get that exponential growth, right? A lot of people use that expression. They say exponential growth. Well, you know, sometimes it's just arithmetic or geometric growth, but we want that exponential growth because beyond me making money at this, because I don't want a gazillion dollars. I'm one of those people, as long as I got a roof over my head, clothes on my back and food in my belly, I'm good, right? And you're going to get that sense from reading the book. I'm more interested in getting the message out. Again, the message of hope and the message of hitting the reset button, the message of failing forward, the message of winning and losing don't define me, they direct me. That message needs to get out to everyone.
Yeah, one of the easiest and best ways to grow as a person, I think, is reading books, right? And so they're not that expensive. We'll easily, I mean, I have four kids, you know, so we have a family of six. We could go to Chick-fil-A and we're spending $60, you know, like that, right? So we'll often do that and then not pour into ourselves. But man, one of the best ways to pour into yourself is reading a book. And I heard this quote one time and I really, really like it. It said, probably the closest to getting inside of someone's brain is to read their book. Right. So when an author writes something, like it's literally like probably the closest you can get to actually getting right into their thought process and to really knowing them as a person. And so this allows us to do that. And you being a very high level wrestler, a very high level coach and a great person, who wouldn't want to do that? Right. So I don't even know what the cost of the book is on your website. I know that everyone listening should take a little time to jump on there, check it out and get the book. Because that's a very minimal investment in yourself and a very minimal investment into others that's going to pay big dividends down the road, right? So, and that, again, that's kind of the beauty of books in general.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, you could go to iTunes and probably spend more money buying a movie, right, on iTunes, which I'm sure a lot of us do, a lot of people listening to this do. and I don't want to be sound presumptuous, but when you do a cost benefit analysis of anything, right? Look at a car. There's a price tag on the car, but then there's the cost of the vehicle that goes beyond. And then there's the value of the vehicle. It's going to get me from point A to point B. For me, I drive something that gets 55 miles to the gallon. Why? Because I like really good gas mileage. And so the value of that, to me, the value of that vehicle was greater than both the price and the cost. When you buy a movie, yeah, you get some momentary distraction. It's pleasurable. We can laugh. We can cry. We can get serious. You know, the story touches us, whatever it happens to be. But is the value of that movie greater than the price or the cost of the movie? Because there's a cost of watching some movies that might be greater than the value or the greater than the price tag because it's hurting you, right? It's making you think bad thoughts. Mm-hmm. Whereas this book, you know, there is a cost to the book, right? There's a price tag on the book. But I think that the value of reading this book, and again, I don't want to sound presumptuous, but the message isn't just mine. Right. There's a greater message in this book that transcends me. And that's that message of hope that right there in and of itself, I think is worth the value of the book, which is $25, right? You know, plus shipping and handling, which is, again, another couple of bucks. And once I reduce the price, now it's going to be even less. So, again, do that cost. Any adult knows a cost benefit analysis, right? They do it all the time with cost, price, and value. I personally would like to believe that the value of this book is far greater than the $25 that I'm charging for it.
Absolutely. I have zero doubts. So, well, Coach, I'll make sure that I put a link to your website so people can go directly. That'll be in the show notes for anybody listening. Click right on it, be able to go over. And Coach, I want to say thank you so much for being on, taking your time to do this and taking your time to write this book so that so we can learn from it.
Oh, absolutely, Chad. I mean, if anything, I should be thanking you, right? You're helping me promote something. You're helping me get the message of hope and handling failure and struggling with faith and living life in those painful moments. No, if anything, I need to thank you because it's important. And the more people like you that help me with this community that you talked about earlier, the more people are going to have that message of hope, you know, put in their hands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is my honor. So, well, everybody, this is Coach Jim Gruenwald. If I put the video out there, which I'll have some video, most people listen to this on iTunes, Spotify, but not all roads lead to gold. Again, that's a great cover. I'm holding up my hands here. Great cover. Coach, thank you so much. If everybody listened, may God bless you, smile upon you, give you peace. Until next time, we're out. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, that's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, t-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love, and God bless.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.